Hello and welcome to Disney Magic Hour, episode number 143. On this week's show, we're going to talk about taking photographs in the Disney parks with my guest, Scott Audette. This episode of Disney Magic Hour is brought to you by MEI Travel for all your vacation planning needs. For visiting Walt Disney World, taking a cruise, traveling anywhere around the globe, visit the experts over at MEI-travel.com, where Becky and her team can get you started on your own adventure. You can find us, because we are, lastgenpodcast.com. Again, L-A-S-T-G-E-N. podcast.com. On Twitter, we are at Diz Magic Hour Pod. That's D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. On Facebook, if you search Disney Magic Hour, you can find our group if you're already there. Add your friends. We can stream us on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, and the pictures in the Patreon for the Instagram. You've got us, Disney Magic Hour Podcast, and patreon.com/Disney Magic Hour. Some changes coming to the Patreon as we are going to make the live threads once a month. But me and Melissa are going to be releasing 2 to 3 bonus podcasts just for the Patreon members every month, because the live threads are hard for people to make. So it looks like we're going to be doing them Sunday nights, 8 o'clock, something like that is what we're thinking of. So looking forward to doing that. Midnight Madness is coming up next week. And sweet Jesus, if you've never seen that movie, dive right in. So I'm not alone this week, even though the norms are not with me right now. Ryan, Melissa, and Courtney are not here, but I am joined by a guy that I met only a couple of months ago, I want to say, and his name is Scott. Scott, how you doing?
Hey, just one question. There's no Twitch account?
No, there's no Twitch account.
Seriously, what generation are you?
Actually, you know, I wanted to do video, and no one else wanted to.
You could do like shadow figures on the wall or something.
And just recently, Melissa was like, and we should do video. And I'm like, why are you saying that? Like, I never suggested this before.
I mean, have you seen me? Your people are missing out on me. I'm beautiful.
That's the only problem is I got a face for radio. But, you know, the ladies, they're fine.
What are you going to do?
Yeah, Courtney and Melissa are quite attractive, so that'll work.
I know. I'm a little disappointed that I'm just here with you.
Hey, mate, you got the best. Awesome. But you know what? The thing is, you are legitimately one of the best photographers I've ever seen. I'm not saying that's a blow smoke up your ass. But we met a couple of months ago over at a friend's house, and you were slinging the camera that I had so badly desired for so long.
It's a nice one. I'm a big fan of the Fuji systems.
Yeah. So we had recently, it came up on the page. You know, I like to post my stuff. Pretty much every day I'll put like a picture from the parks up, and the suggestion was, why haven't you ever had a show about photography in the parks? And the honest answer is because I'm really a very big amateur, guys. When it comes to like film stuff, I might be able to be a little more in depth, but when it comes to just true photography, I'm very amateur with a fair cinematic eye. When you want to go into the technicality of it, I don't have that. Scott is a professional, and I wanted you on the show to just sort of, let's just talk about like approaches that you take when you're going to the parks, because you're a big Disney person.
I am a big Disney person. My family has been annual pass holders on and off the last decade, and we like to get over there, and I don't know how to go anywhere without a camera anymore, like especially like a vacation or a travel type thing. That kind of brings me my joy when I'm traveling. So going to the park with a camera is not that unusual for me. You're more likely to find me shooting a picture of my family at a park with a camera than actually picking up at home to shoot a picture of them with a camera.
Okay. Because
then it's more like work.
So when you head out to the parks, you know, are you limiting, like, what are you looking for?
I'm not looking for nothing. I have no preconceived notion when I go in. We tend to go very randomly. We almost never plan our trips over. It's just sort of like, hey, we've got nothing going on. Let's go see fireworks.
Okay.
And so a lot of my pictures, it's not like I'm like, oh, I've got to get the picture of Mickey and Walt with fireworks behind it. I shoot from wherever I'm at. If I'm at something like that, it's make pictures around me. I've spent most of my career as a photojournalist. So you make with what you've got. And that's sort of how I treat the photography there. And it's a great place for street photography, where I'm kind of doing a little bit more of these days than I did in the past. I've never really been a huge fan of street photography. So, these days, I've been a little bit more into it, and especially there because people have guards down a little bit more and you can meet some neat pictures. And it's an interesting reflection on society too. Like, one of my favorites right now is the little kid getting upset at their parent for the 90th selfie with like the parade behind him. Like, just the other day we were watching the 3 o'clock parade, and there was this little Latin girl and her father, and he must have tapped her on the shoulder for every single float. And I thought she didn't get to see the parade because she took, but she was hilarious because she was losing it on him by like the 10th float. And it makes her keep pictures.
So when you say street photography, you know, for someone who doesn't know that term, what exactly are you referring to? Like, what do you mean by that?
More of a candid look at people in the street, what they're doing, how they're reacting with each other. Oftentimes they don't see what you're doing. I mean, I wouldn't call it paparazziing because it's not, and I don't shoot stuff that would make me uncomfortable or them uncomfortable, but sometimes you'll see somebody just lost in the moment and it really makes for a neat picture. Even with my own kids, they like, you know, I don't like shooting them posed just because I would rather catch them in the moment.
See, yeah, that's, I've seen a rash now of people go to the parks and all their photos look so staged, I can't actually tell if they were having a good time because nothing looks real.
Yeah.
You know, like, it just comes off as like, okay, yeah, you all jumped at the same time. I guess that's a thing. You know, I see that in wedding photos. You know, I don't know. It just,
I don't know why anybody jumps in the air for a wedding photographer. That drives me insane.
We said no. Yeah, they were like, do you want to do a jump? I was like, no, of course I don't want to do a jump in the middle of the air. Like, why would I do that? So one of the rules that I always sort of, if anyone asks me, like, what do you try to do when you're over at the parks? I've always said, look at what other people are doing and then maybe never do that.
I at this point in my life, I really don't pay a lot of attention to what other people are doing.
Uh-huh.
It's really, I mean, I'm just there with my kids, you know, it's, I see everything by light and like my entire day is, no matter where I am, what I'm doing, I see light and contrast and color and shadow. And I think of everything in my world around me visually. And would that make a cool picture or does it not make a cool picture? And the upside to us having digital versus the film days is you can take a risk and shoot a picture you normally wouldn't shoot. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. You know, there's a lot of waste in what we do and what I shoot. You know, not everything turns out amazing, but sometimes you stumble into something that just really works.
Yeah, like what I find that usually my ratio is, and especially now because digital, because I'll take 12 shots of the same thing because I'm trying to get something different, you know, where I'm like, okay, what if I do this? What if I do this? I find it's usually maybe 1 out of 15, you know, something like that, that I'm like, okay, I like this one enough that I'm going to share it, you know, or I'm going to like further look at it through an editing software.
I don't know, you know. My numbers may be even higher than that. I tend to be even pickier. And then, you know, these days I'm able to share it instantly, essentially from my phone to the camera. So
yeah,
I've already made my edits before I've ever popped a disc in the you know, into the computer. A lot of times I don't even pop a disc in anymore.
So what do you actually, are you editing at all on your phone before you're posting up?
No.
No, you're just going straight from the camera.
95% of the time, any of my Disney stuff, usually I'm going straight from the camera.
Now, you like to shoot in black and white a lot, which I also love shooting in black, especially in the parks. I think it looks phenomenal.
So I spend most of my days shooting with Canon 1D Mark II, you know, D2Xs, and at 12 frames a second, and shooting hockey and other sports and things, news events. And so when I went to the Fuji system, I went to it to slow down, and I also wanted to look at things differently. And I started out in the film world. I set up dark rooms when I used to work for the Associated Press all over Disney for their events. And we used to process in the bathrooms. And so I sort of have that heritage behind me that I wanted to go back to. The Fuji film system has some great film simulations that mimic their films. And in particular, Acros, which is their black and white simulation, is fantastic. And so for me, I wanted to go back to shooting one frame a second. I wanted a straight black and white that looked black and white, not something, a color image that I was converting to black and white.
Yeah.
And so I think black and white also, for me, cuts out some of the noise, because I am so invested in trying to find things that the color and the brightness and the shadows and the beam of light and whatever is hitting them, I can block out a lot of those extra things and start concentrating solely on the subject again. And I feel like I'm more of a photographer when I use that system than when often I'm with my client shooting my full-blown Canon system.
So now, you know, you have a really nice rig. You have, you know, nice lenses going with it. Have you ever just, you know, spent a day using, like, your smartphone? Because, I mean, a majority of the people who are listening to this, they're just going to go around with their smartphones. I mean, have you ever really messed with that? And
no, I'm, like, anti-smartphone photographer. That being said, my wife and I were in Cuba in February. She took her iPhone X and that instead of her camera, and that's what she shot everything with, and some of the stuff is amazing.
Yeah.
And I couldn't ever imagine that. I need to have
more control. Yeah.
There's something about an optical viewfinder that is still romantic to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I still need to feel like there's something in my hands when I'm making a picture. And you know what? People don't connect as well with a phone when you're taking their picture as they do with a camera. When you're taking their picture with a phone, it becomes the smile, the cheese. It just doesn't, it's not the same, you know. When somebody with a camera, they understand sometimes there's going to be some direction and you're going to work with them. And just, there's something different. There's some sort of magic to it.
It's a little bit of mentality that goes into seeing one thing in front of you as opposed to another.
Right.
All right. So when you go into the parks and you have your gear, how many lenses are you bringing? Because, I mean, I have two. And I feel sometimes I want to do, like, you know, so I don't have to change the lens every time. It's like I want to do an entire lap of just walking around with this one lens. But I never accomplish that goal because I'll see something and I'll be like, well, what if the light changes and then it won't look this way? And then I'm swapping out lenses in the middle of Magic Kingdom, which is kind of terrifying.
See, I don't know. This doesn't even bother me changing
them. Yeah, go ahead now.
There's probably huge dust balls all over my sensor. But, I mean, I keep a little pocket rocket with me in case, so I could blow it off if I have to. It's not a big deal because you can see the sensor in the Fuji X-Pro 2. But, so it depends. Like, I have a full bag now. For those who actually may have Fujifilm cameras, I have the 23, the 56, the 16, and the 90. And so they're all in my bag, and I have a little hipster bag, as my kids and my employees call it. So I've got a little brown Domke bag that I wear as a messenger bag with my hipster strap made in Greece. And
I bought the same one, man.
And some days I'll bring all of it, and some days I won't bring any of it except for one lens.
Do you like doing that? Do you like almost – I don't know if you want to use the word challenge yourself, but I've always – I do enjoy when I lock myself – like. If it's 100 degrees out. But I have made choices where I'm like, you know what? I'm going to lock myself into this one lens so that I have to work a little bit harder to find what I want through this.
So recently I was over at – where did we go? Hollywood Studios. Had to think about it. We've been there a bunch lately. And all I actually did bring in was my my 23-1.4, which is equivalent to a 35-millimeter lens.
Yeah, that's the one that I normally
And I tend to use that a lot.
Yeah.
Sometimes I see it as a challenge to try to shoot pictures with that,
mm-hmm.
but I don't ever go in feeling like I've got to make pictures. I go in feeling like, you know, it's if I make a picture, great. If I don't, I don't. I mean, the pictures I'm making are for me. I mean, if other people enjoy them, that's great, but it's really just sort of my thing. When I went to Cuba, I did only bring two lenses. I brought a 23 and a 56. That's all I brought.
Okay.
So that's the equivalent to a 35 and an 85 on the Fuji system. And I'm thrilled with the pictures I made there. So
I remember looking at them. They were really nice.
It's not necessarily the amount of equipment you bring in, you know. It's fun to go in with one lens and see what you can make. You can make a ton of pictures with just the one.
So that's sort of like the message I want to get to anyone who's listening who, if you have this sort of intimidation towards buying, you know, a pricier camera, you know, something that you'd have to make an investment in. I did this to myself. I drove myself crazy over lens selection. Find one thing that you like and then just if that's what you're going to have for a while, if that's what you're going to have for your first year, you know, because everyone has a budget, then do that. But just then enjoy the hell out of that one thing that you have, and you'll find you're going to get better. You know, you're just, as the more you use it and the more you know, you're out there, you're going to find that you find your comfort zone into what you find attractive through a lens. And a lot of times what you find attractive through a lens, there's going to be other people who share the same thought, you know. But going back towards a park, I mean, now, obviously, you know, you got the four parks, everything's expanding. Star Wars Galaxy's Edge is coming next year. Right now, if you have a choice to go to any of the four parks, which one are you going to? You got one day to go shooting. Where are you going?
I don't know. You know, there's a lot going on at Hollywood Studios, but it sort of feels limiting at this point because there's not the access you can get at some of the other parks. If I was looking for sheer people pictures and cool light and shapes, you got to go to the Magic Kingdom, I think.
Yeah, you still got to go there.
Yeah, I think you just have more opportunities. You've got more character stuff going on. You've got... You know, you've got more stage shows in front of the castle. You've got a parade. The other stuff is tough. Like, Animal Kingdom's great. I went and shot it with just a 90 one day when I picked it up. And that was a lot of fun to shoot it with just a 90. But this sounds terrible, but you can shoot a lot of those pictures at a zoo. You know, and so there's just not the variety. If you're looking for a variety of pictures, there's only one place, and that's the Magic Kingdom.
And that's the kingdom. The busiest.
I don't know. Park. What do you think?
I actually find myself going to Animal Kingdom the most, I think, right now. The park that I least go to until just recently was Hollywood Studios, because I feel like that whole park is just staring at me being like, just wait a year and we'll talk again.
And that's why we took off with our annual passes for a little bit, just because I felt like everywhere we went, there was a fence.
Yeah.
And I was like, eh.
Epcot's going to be going under some movement now. They're also about to,
the wrecking ball is about to hit the front of that place like nobody's ever seen.
But it needs it.
Yeah,
it does need it. You know, like walking around for Moonlight Magic a little bit ago, and they had the World Showcase closed from England through China, and it was like, what the hell are we supposed to do? Like, hang around Future World? Like, there's nothing to do here.
Well, we had my birthday was recently, and a friend of ours who's a cast member, they're blacked out from Hollywood Studios right now, obviously, because of Toyland.
Yeah.
And so he was like, oh, let's go meet us over Epcot. Now, my youngest and I had been in Epcot earlier in the week. We were like, we need not come back here anytime soon.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing to do. And when you fast pass, and not to get off track, but when you fast pass there, because all the rides are pretty much tier one, you only get one.
Yeah.
So what else are you going to do after that? I mean, take my 11-year-old drinking? I mean, he and I could drink around the world, I guess. But how many slushies can you drink in a day?
Yeah, I love Epcot, and I like walking around Epcot. But the activity level in Epcot is – that's another park that you feel it when you walk in there. You're like, all right, things are going to change around here, you know. So Magic Kingdom. You're in Magic Kingdom. It turns into nighttime. It's well lit, but are you comfortable with, you know, putting up your ISO to avoid your tripod?
Listen, your ISO is your friend, and your tripod is not at the Magic Kingdom.
I blow the ISO through the roof. I don't care.
Because the Disney police will get you for your tripod if you're not looking.
Yeah, it's true, yeah. So I mean,
and don't be the last guy waiting at the park till it closes. They don't like that either, right here. It's okay. You can live without the Main Street empty picture.
But, you know, I don't know. I feel like that... You know, the noise that a higher ISO creates, even though it was modern cameras, yeah, it's there, but it's not, I don't think it's hard.
Listen, I dare anybody who's listening to bring out their ISO 3200 film from a decade ago and put it against my 3200 digital.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not the same.
But the thing is, I think it looks nice.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's fine. Like, it doesn't, the noise doesn't bother me.
No, see, I think it gives it, like, this added little aesthetic of... A camera that is no longer available.
I mean, let's be honest. People don't use pictures. Nobody prints pictures anymore, right?
Yeah.
They put it on their smartphone. They put it on their iPad. They put it on their Facebook account or their Instagram. And people who are worried about noise, you're not going to see it. Like, it just doesn't exist. And nobody's not going to like your picture because it's a little noisy, you know?
Yeah. Especially even on the formats print, that we like, watch. Yeah.
So part of my day life, I work at the Tampa Bay Lightning and as their team photographer. In this past playoff series, I did 20 by 30 prints of every single game. And I use my – and nothing we shoot there is below 2,500 ISO, whether it's on my Fuji system or on my Canon system.
Okay.
And we put up black and white prints straight out of my Fuji stuff that were – like you looked at them and they were beautiful. People were falling all over them. The noise didn't matter. So jack up the noise, you know, throw out all the traditional ideas. Like I saw this story recently about rules of third, like it's time for it to die. Mm-hmm. That's probably true. Listen, at the end of the day, the only person who has to like the picture you shot is yourself, right? It's got to invoke some sort of emotion in you. You need to feel some sort of connection to it. If other people like it, great. So don't worry about the rules of third. Don't worry about ISO, you know. Treat photography for what it is, the ability to capture moments.
See, that was always the thing that I loved the most about filmmaking. There were two things in particular. Like, I remember something my teacher taught me, and I've always kept it with me, was he's like, learn the rules. Learn the rules so that you know how to break them in the way that you want to. Because that's the, you know, when shooting a movie, you know, because film, the narrative of film and the way the camera's supposed to sit when you're shooting a two shot and all that, you can watch movies that follow it to the T and it can be kind of like boring to watch. And the stuff that's really exciting is the people who clearly know the rules, but they know how to bend the rules to still keep the idea solid, but offer up something new visually. Every time I see a flash go off for a fireworks show, I want to scream because I don't know. I just never understood like why that's still a thing that people think is helping. But you know, again, like all those little things that I may have thought was, okay, I got to do this or I got to do this. The more you learn that you don't have to do any of that stuff and you just got to find what interests you the most, you're going to have more fun. And I think the reaction to your stuff is going to be much, much higher then as well. You know, because the other thing with photography and with filmmaking is, think of this, guys, gals. You are taking a photo of a subject, right? There are an unlimited amount of angles that you can try to capture that moment from. And maybe you have a limited amount of time to make that decision, you know? Maybe you don't. If it's a stationary target, you know, you can really look around. But it's in that instance of I can go wherever I want, usually, you know, and try to look at this thing from my own different perspective. And that's what I enjoy the most is when I look at something and I'm like, well, my brain just does this on its own. What makes me looking at this different than maybe somebody else? You know, I mean, so you find your own kind of little self within there, but that's sort of the fun of photography, in my opinion.
But so back to the ISO tonight, like,
yeah,
I don't care. Like, I'll jack up the ISO. I'll shoot it at 1.4 if I have to. You know, if I have to shoot 10 frames to get one sharp because I'm shaky peating it, so be it, you know, because I'm at something ridiculous at a 15th or a 30th of a second or even slower, you know. But it's, again, it's just the trial and error thing. Like, you know, there's some basics that are certain times. Disney is always going to look great at sunrise. It's always going to look beautiful, yep, at sunset. You know, listen, as photographers, we know that that's, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to realize that the golden light at the end of the day is going to look beautiful. Everything in the park looks great at that time of, yep, day, you know? Or everything looks great early in the morning, and then at noon it looks terrible. You know, that's not saying it won't make pictures at noon, but you know it looks terrible. And so knowing those things will help your photography there as well, you know? But you've got so much time, and like for me, sometimes we'll sneak over and like just with me and one of the boys. When I do that, it's a lot easier than with the whole family. Mm-hmm. And sometimes my youngest is finally getting to the point where he's really likes photography. He's got an older Fuji camera of mine that's all manual, and he uses that as well. And so we've started doing some photography expeditions so he can learn more about f-stops and shutter speed and all of those things. But taking that extra second isn't going to change a day, you know, like,
yeah,
sometimes it's that one extra second that's going to make the difference between a great picture or no picture. But you've just got to experiment. You just got to just do it. Like, just take the picture. It doesn't matter. Like, every once in a while, I'll get somebody who hands me a broken camera, and they're like, oh, my camera doesn't work. Can you take a look at it? And I'll pop their disc out. I probably shouldn't admit this, that I look at the pictures and see what's on it. And I'll realize that on one disc, they have 3 years worth of pictures. And I'm thinking, there's 3 years worth of bad pictures on here because you only took one picture every time. Like, you probably knew just that wasn't a very good picture, but you didn't take a second one. Like, you were shooting a roll of film and it was going to cost you $900 to process it or something. It's okay to shoot 10. It's okay to shoot 12. It's okay to shoot 20 if it takes that many to make the picture. I mean, obviously, if you're shooting the moment, it may not, that may pass. But but if you're shooting, you know, Walt and Mickey holding hands,
go nuts.
Go
nuts.
You know, you may find out that it's from the right that looks better, or from the back left that looks better, or, you know, work around it a little bit. Spend some time working on composure, you know, figuring out how you want it to look.
Just, you know, when we were leaving the After Hours event, which was, again, it was the first time I was in Epcot for a while. So they had these, you know, they had the lights, actually spotlights going off in front of Spaceship Earth. And I was like, okay, this will look really nice. I must have taken 50 photos of that thing because I didn't know when exactly the light would look best to me later when I looked at them. And I was like, you know what? Go nuts. You know, frame this up. Take it, you know, try to time the first one to what you want, and then just do a burst, and then we'll look through those, and I'll see, like, okay, I can do that. I couldn't do that when I was younger, when I first came to the parks, because the damn film was so expensive. But now, in this digital age, go crazy. You know, take as much as you possibly can. Maybe just bring a backup battery. I mean, right now I'm getting to the point where, with the camera that, you know, that you have as well, I can get maybe like 5-6 hours before it's, you know, shouting me in the face, depending on how many shots I'm taking, maybe 2 hours.
Somebody doesn't have it in high performance mode, because if you do, it doesn't last anywhere near that long.
Okay. Well, you got to show me that later. What are you referring to? What are you referring to in like high performance mode?
So they've got like a normal and a performance setting in the Fuji X Pro 2. They have it in the Fuji X-T2 and the soon to become an X-T3. That I think makes the AF a little faster. The camera's a little more reactive.
Oh, really?
It's just providing a little bit more power. But the way I use them, like, I have three in my bag right now because I will burn through one in a couple hours.
Okay, for the batteries.
Easily. And especially if I use the Wi-Fi just eats the battery. But disk space is so cheap. So, like, I just bought a bunch of disks. I'm headed to Mexico to go photograph whale sharks. And I needed some more discs for the GoPro setup, for our Hero 6 setup we're taking with us. And 64 gig discs were $29.
Like, yeah.
You know, like,
it used to be a buck a gig. And that, I remember when that was the thing, it was like, we're getting real good. This is getting real cheap now.
You know, so,
and now we're down to a third of that.
And then, you know, as far as storing it, like, I obviously, because of what I do for a living, I have a huge system at home, both that backs itself up to the net and the whole nine. Cloud storage is so insanely cheap that you don't have to store your pictures on your hard drives at home. So why just dump them to, you know, I feel fairly confident that even the companies that are using, that seem to be one thing like Box, are really actually AWS Backbone. So your images, Amazon's not going anywhere tomorrow. So your images are...
Cloud is now just like a normal thing now in our lives, and that's something you can really use to your advantage. I use Lightroom. You know, if that's something that I use when I'm in the parks. I'll turn on the Wi-Fi, and if I find one or two photos that I want to put up to Instagram, I'll send those to my phone. That then puts them on the cloud. I mean, it's a little bit compressed, obviously, because I'm doing it through that way. But again, for the media that I'm using it for in that particular moment, it's great. And actually, towards that, I've been asked many times, you know, what setting are you using your camera to take the photos? Are you keeping the RAW and the JPEG? I mean, that's what I have it for right now. But do you go even further? Is there, you know, a step further?
So I don't shoot anything but RAW plus JPEG.
Okay.
For anything.
Yeah.
Primarily because I want for the black and white stuff, I want the original film simulation baked in the JPEG. And otherwise, I feel like it's cheating.
I've actually noticed because they've added on Lightroom. They have the Acro setting.
Yeah, and
it doesn't duplicate what I'm getting in the camera if I just take the JPEG straight from the memory card.
Yeah, it's not the same. I mean, it's close, but it's not the same. It was like recently I had one of my clients, a large image distribution service, send out an advisory on a bunch of pictures I shot in black and white that they were color converted to black and white. And I had to have one of my staff call them and explain to them that I don't shoot like that, that if it's in black and white, I intended it in black and white. I shot it in black and white, and here it is in black and white. Like, it doesn't exist. Like, do I have it in color? Yes.
Yeah, because the RAW is always going to be in color.
Right. It's just a raw data dump.
But yeah.
For me, like, I shoot a film simulator. Like, so that's one of the things they're Disney. Like, as much as you hear me talking about the Fuji stuff, I really love their stuff. And I'll jump around the film simulations. Like, I have a bunch of custom ones set up for Velvia for when I'm shooting just a wide scene of the park or something that I know that I want the colors to just be obscenely gaudy and vibrant.
Yeah. That's what I did in Toy Story Land.
And, you know,
I was like, this works for this place.
Where I want to shoot regular with the standard, which is simulates Provia. You know, the color is a little more muted, but they're still vibrant. And then Astia, like if I'm shooting pictures of the kids and I'm shooting color, I may go to the Astia because it's just a little softer and a little more portraity, a little more pink in the tones.
Okay.
And, but for the most part, I just shoot the black and white thing. Like, I'll start shooting the color and be like, I need to go back.
I know. I keep doing that. You got me. That's your fault, too, honestly. Yeah. Because you told me about the Acros. You were like, yo, I saw you put up some black. You're doing an Acros, right? And I was like, what the hell is that? You know, because I was just learning the camera. I'm still learning the camera. And I was like, what's that? And then you told me about it. And that's it. I'm locked.
So here's one of my big tips. And you probably think I'm crazy for this. So
now?
I don't ask anybody to take family pictures. Like, you used to walk around asking people to take a picture, or you'd ask them to take a picture with your phone of you in there, right?
You're giving people your camera?
No. I use PhotoPass nonstop to shoot my family pictures. Because one, I was never in them, right? So now I'm in my family pictures. And two, because I'm not worrying about taking that picture anymore, now my mind is free to enjoy my time at the park and shoot my own pictures. Like, you know, years ago, before Disney switched over for the annual pass holders to get photo passes part of their package, you know, you'd hand somebody a phone or you'd hand the photo pass photography a phone, or whatever. It just was like a process, like it felt dragged out. Now I'm dragging my kids and they're like, no, we're not doing this. I'm not going to stay with the Sith Lord again. Like, it's free. Let's go. But then we get to do other stuff. Like, I'm in the pictures. That makes my wife happy, you know. And I feel like I don't have to, like, that whole, it's almost like a burden's taken off my shoulders. Like, okay, family pictures are done and over. Let's go shoot stuff that we like to shoot.
There's
photo pass.
I don't do it enough. And I know my wife always asks me to can we get a photo of us? And I'm like, why? Like, I know I'm here, but I know I should say yes to that more often. Because there's not a lot of photographic evidence that I, like, exist on Earth.
Right, exactly.
Like, because I'm always the one behind the camera. So normally I'm just not part of it. You know, I don't exist in that equation.
I also have a friend who works over at PhotoPass in one of the management positions. And I actually do it just to tweak him, too. Because I always send him back the picture. I'm like, I don't know if the white balance is accurate here. All right. Why are you bouncing the light off of this wall? It drives him bonkers. It keeps telling me my account's flagged. That's why I don't get my ride pictures anymore.
Are you looking? I mean, how much are you looking forward to bringing your camera to Galaxy's Edge when it finally cracks open?
Ah, it should be awesome. My youngest has already told us that he can't wait for the hotel. That's what he's most excited about. They're huge Star Wars fans, but, like, listen, I mean, I'm sure it'll be all cool and it'll be great to see the Falcon, but the hotel is ridiculous.
The hotel, the idea behind the hotel,
concept is insane.
If that thing pull works, it off, yeah, that's the big question.
Like, if they pull it off, it could be insane. And the pictures are going to be neat. You know, like, there are lots of little things they're doing over there that I know about, like, on the PhotoPass side. Like, they're trying to make sure the cameras fit in. You know, like, everybody.
Oh, that's a cool idea. I see.
Everybody will be, like, the typical PhotoPass outfit, you know, like, the guy with the safari hat and the safari jacket. By the way, photo vests aren't cool. I'm sorry. If you've got one, don't bring it to the park. You know, like, you see those guys running around with them. But you can wear your pantaloons. Those ones on Main Street.
Pantaloons, yeah. Yeah, okay with that.
I'm okay with that in the striped shirt.
Pantaloon plus.
Yeah, if you want to wear those around, you got my. But even like those guys are going to have to be costumed.
Yeah, yeah. They're going to be fully everybody will be costumed. Top to bottom. So, you know what I was just thinking of? This is a stupid thing to think of, but there is no photography in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like not a thing that exists. It was like paper. Like paper didn't exist until Last Jedi. Like you never saw paper in the Star Wars universe.
Maybe we're all getting holographs.
Yeah, like that's the thing. That's what we're going to move to. It's all going to be Tupac is going to be in Star Wars land.
There's also no pictures in Toy Story Mania. Did you know that? No ride picture.
No, there isn't. That is weird. Why is there no picture in there?
I don't know.
That seems like
I didn't get a good answer to that one. I was like,
you know, we talked about it before. Thing we're gonna bring it up anyway. We're gonna go a little off topic here for a second. Toy Story Land.
Not a fan.
You didn't dig it, huh?
It feels a little bit forced.
It's so small.
It's so tiny. I think part of it for me is the current only one way in and one way out. That sounds ridiculous, but it feels like you're swimming upstream.
Yeah.
And so the traffic doesn't flow through there very well. I will say this, the Green Army guys,
they're on game.
Killing it.
Yeah, they're on
game. Killing it. Amazing. But I feel like there's no depth to it. Like, so what has always made the Magic Kingdom unique is you could kind of like, you could
those small
go
little places.
Down a small path and,
yeah.
and head somewhere. There's no small path. Like, it's one main road through, and
you're seeing exactly what I said about it.
It just feels like they threw it on the side. Listen, it's beautifully themed. They've done a great job. My wife loved it. The Tinker Toys brought back great memories for her. But I want to be able, like, I guess as a photographer, this may be one of the things I feel like even though I put a picture up there, a couple from my Instagram, I don't feel like there's a lot of pictures to be had because you can't get anywhere to take them.
You know, one of the strangest things that I thought was the bridge that goes over Slinky's Dash. The wall is so high that you can't actually see the coaster as it goes through. I don't know why that bothered me so much.
And the bridge goes
nowhere.
Like, it goes to the ride, and that's it. Like, if you put a bridge, usually it goes someplace.
No, yeah, it's just there. There's no avenues.
Yeah,
there's no avenues to explore.
And maybe once traffic moves through, it'll feel different.
They'll have obviously they have that second exit, you know, over near Star Wars, and who knows what that's going to look like in a year? That might look and feel very different, and maybe that'll help. But yeah, as of right now, it's. Like, I'll always use Pandora as the example and Diagon Alley. After walking through those lands, I immediately was like, all right, when's the next time we're going to go in there?
Yeah.
Because I want to look around more. I want to see all the little things. And I haven't had that pang for Toy Story Land at all.
I think we're going to get that with Star Wars. Or I hope we're getting it with Star Wars.
I would imagine that that's going to be.
But you're right. Like, when you talk about Harry Potter and the things they've done there, it's immersive. It feels like you're part of the world. Like, even Cars Land in California feels like you're part of the world.
That is so good.
This doesn't necessarily, like, it's neat, but it's not.
Yeah.
Like, you're not immersed.
Cars Land's a perfect example.
You don't feel like you've stepped into something. You just feel like it's there.
Yeah. Cars Land's a perfect example because that's another one where there's the main strip, but the fun of Cars Land is going off to the left and right and finding all the smaller things.
Right.
You know, and that's sort of what it's missing over there. Sorry about it, guys. Toy Story Land's been a big thing that we've been talking a lot about because it goes into, you know, what we were, you know, what I've said before in shows, you know, about the movies, you know, where every movie isn't going to be the greatest movie you've ever seen, but you can still appreciate the movie that's like, hey, that was pretty damn good. I think Toy Story falls into that category where you're like, it's pretty good. You know, it's not killing it. It's not saying this whole societal thing that we have right now where it's like hate or love it is garbage. You know, there can be a middle ground where you're like, you know what, there's a lot of things to love in here, but I wish that it was a little more this. And that's what I think of when I think of Toy Story Land.
And you can go and wait and watch and hopefully get to see one of the costume characters drop because those poor guys have got to be dying in those suits.
They're moving them out really nice and quickly. I've noticed that, like
Buzz Lightyear, that whoever they're rotating through there. you know he doesn't have that permanent smile on the inside.
You know, that's a character I've seen the least walking around is Buzz, and I wonder if it's because of the heat.
I think we've seen him each time. We've been over like three times now, and they put him in the same spot right by one of the gates, so he's in and out pretty quickly.
Quick access in and out.
Yeah. I mean, that being said, again, like the photo pass stuff there, I made my kids get in line so we could take a picture of Buzz Lightyear. I love that stuff. Like when we talk about photography in the parks, I don't think you can leave those guys behind. They do a great job.
They do a great job. And they deal with every problem.
And I love using the service now where I wouldn't have used it before so I could be in the pictures with my kids. They do a great job of moving people in and out. And it's, you know, you still feel like there's a moment there for your kids but the lines move and they've really gotten it. Disney has really done a great job of dialing that in.
Yeah. I think my biggest takeaway right now from Toy Story Land is like what you said with the Army Men. That's the closest that Disney World has had to free roaming characters since they got rid of free roaming characters. And I think they're testing the waters for Galaxy's Edge having more things like that. But so far, working really well.
Those guys are fantastic. Yeah.
And I guess they do it with Stormtroopers also.
And the Stormtroopers have done a great job. But like if you've been here enough, you know that the Stormtroopers pretty much say the same thing over and over.
Yeah.
Like someone needs to give them a new chip or something with a few more phrases. Like I always laugh when we sneak in to see the Sith Lord. I'm like, okay. Or sorry, Kylo Ren. We're like, dude, we heard that last time. Like, you got to have more than six phrases.
Yeah, come on. Get Adam Driver in here. Also,
I love
Ren without the helmet. I'm sorry, but that's the far superior.
But the whole Army Men thing. Those guys are reacting. And that's huge. Like I saw them with this little girl the other day whose Woody had lost its hat, and they made this huge production about it and marched her around to try to find it, and they couldn't find it, and like it was phenomenal.
They really put the work in.
Yeah.
That's
like,
nice.
And they didn't break character. Like, it was just, it was solid, man.
That's
like, whoever's working with those guys on the backside for Disney doing the training has nailed it. And so hopefully we will get to see some of that on the Star Wars side.
So you know what? I got a question for you now. Going back to the photography world, you don't bring in a tripod.
No.
What are you doing with fireworks?
So I just tend to shoot them as wide open as I can if I need to. You got to remember, like, depth of field. If you're shooting something in the foreground with fireworks behind you, you're going to have a little bit of an issue. But when you're shooting, like, the castle with fireworks, even if you're shooting at 1.4, and not obviously a British lens is going to 1.4, so say you're shooting at 2.8 or F4 or whatever, you're just going to have to handhold the shutter speed. Not every picture is sharp. Like, you know,
yeah.
There are some I shoot that they're not sharp and they're all shaky Pete. And
what are you usually doing your frame rate at that second?
So I'll tend to jack the frame rate up to like 8 frames a second.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow. All right.
But you got to use with the Fuji stuff. Here's another tip. You got to use the most recent cards because otherwise you hit the buffer after like 5 frames. With these, you can go like 20. Okay. RAW plus JPEG before you hit it. I don't do that often, but enough. Like when we're shooting hockey, there's some hockey stuff I shoot with it in the hallways. A guy is walking where I can't be single frame. So because we use it in that environment, we had to switch to faster discs. And because the slower discs to offload, because these files are big. They're not small.
I mean, obviously you take much, much, much more than I do. I had like a 240 photo drop that I had to do a couple of weeks ago. And it took about an hour. And so I just set it up and like I watched TV and the thing was, it was like 1 a.m, but I really wanted to look through these things. So I was up till about 3 or so, you know, just so I can go through them and, you know, see like, oh, okay, good. This worked, you know, because even sometimes when I look at a photo on the LCD, you know, if I'm previewing it on the camera, it might look okay. But then when I bring it at home, I'm like, all right, man, I didn't get exactly what I was hoping for. So as much as I'll use that as a measuring stick, you know, I still wonder when I get home, will I notice that, like, okay, I didn't get exactly what I wanted to, you know?
I mean, that happens from time to time, but because I move the pictures usually to my phone so quickly that I just, for me, moving them, because I'm sharing most of those socially, I almost never look at them at the computer anymore. Like, it just doesn't. I spend so much time editing and shooting and marketing and all that stuff, like looking at, sometimes just looking at pictures on the computer sometimes I lose the connection to him. Like, I'm horrible at second guessing myself when it comes to my edit. I can edit anybody's stuff, lights out. I've got a fairly good reputation for doing that stuff. But sometimes I start second guessing images if I look at them at the computer, or if I just go with my visceral reaction to them.
That's the right one.
That's the right one.
Yeah. That would happen when shooting a flick too.
And because I come from a news background, and this sort of kills me in my business a little bit, to be honest with you, is that I'm not much of a post-processor. Because I spent my entire young adult life working in news photography,
mm-hmm.
You weren't allowed to make major changes to pictures. So when I see guys like really burning in skies, or like changing skies out altogether, or
that's super weird to me.
Or like over HDRing it, or just running 17 filters that you got on your phone on it because, oh, wow, it looks cool. And it does look cool. It doesn't feel like photography to me, but that's a generational thing. Like, I grew up in a generation with film. We couldn't make those changes.
Yeah.
Like, I can remember the first time, like, I shot something on film for my client. I used to do a bunch of stuff at Disney with a company called Atlantic Pacific Music. They used to do pay-per-view concerts out there. And we were right on the edge of when film scanners came in. So I'd shoot something on film from a concert, I'd scan it, and then I'd send it to LA for them to print. And the printer in LA would be like, I can't print this from the negative. I can't. But I was printing with the first Epson photo printer then. That was like, and so I'd send them proofs that way. And then the printer would be like, we can't print it that way. We can't get the contrast out of the film. And film recorders were coming out at that point. So you could, but you had to output another piece of film.
Okay.
Film with it, you know, so you would make the changes to the computer, output a piece of film, and then print that picture traditionally. Jesus. And so you had to get it right in the camera. Like, the moment we saw that happening, starting to tweak stuff to where it didn't look like that you could reproduce on a piece of film, to me, felt disingenuous.
Do you ever go into the parks with actual film anymore? Do you ever do that?
No. Not real. A couple years ago I did with, like, I like toy cameras.
Okay.
So, like, I've got a Lomo Sprocket Rocket, and then a couple other ones. And then for a while I was shooting a lot of Fuji instant film. So I have pretty much every company that's made one, Lomo and everybody else, I pretty much have every one of them. And every once in a while I use those. Like, I haven't used them at the parks just because I don't feel like they have the control that I need out of them. But then, you know, like when I was in Cuba last summer, I took one, and the best picture I made came out of an instant camera. I spent one day while I was there just shooting instant.
So going towards, like, the post-processing, and then, you know, we'll wrap up soon, so I don't want to keep for too long. That was something that when I first started messing around, I didn't really do much. And now I'll find a shot in particular, and I'm like, well, if I just go nuts on this one, if I just, like, try to just make it look as strange and off as possible, sometimes it kind of works. You know, it's a weird photo. Like, it doesn't make sense realistically, but either does anything that I've ever seen Oliver Stone shoot, you know, like, as a filmmaker. So there's this weird middle ground where I think I find that I'm comfortable with it in some sections, and then others I don't like it at all.
I mean, like, I'm not adverse to post-processing. Like, go nuts. Like, if you find something and you like it, I mean, why not do it? Like, I just, like I said, I think it's a generational thing. You know, people are more apt to, when you can, there are probably, you know, 50,000 camera apps for the iPhone and Android that are filters from the, you know, your 1960s filter, 70s, 80s, whatever. Use them. Like, I mean, in some essence, that's what I'm doing when I pick a film simulation. You know, I'm post-processing the image to match a film.
Yeah.
But for me, I just don't, the beauty of a photograph is what I saw, not what I can do to it.
Gotcha.
And so, I mean, there are times I have to, like, you know, there's no question there's, you know, I don't do major changes that would be, because I still follow photojournalism ethical boundaries, because a lot of my stuff is still distributed by companies that do abide by those rules.
Oh, okay. I didn't even know those existed anymore.
And so, I don't make the big wholesale changes, but depending on the client, some of them are going to, some of them are going to make huge changes to stuff, you know?
Okay.
And so that's part of what's expected, I guess.
So just to sort of wrap up, let's say you have someone there, an amateur, you know, they're just starting with photography, they're going off to the parks. What's the one thing that you tell them?
That's interesting. I'm all about light. Like, light is your guide, right? Pay attention to the light. Because that's where, you know, there's nothing wrong with shooting it from the backlit side. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's the better picture, but find where the light is best for the picture. You know, a lot of times you'll see the mistake where somebody shoots, you know, somebody in a shadow in front of the White Castle. Now, you know that one of those things is not coming out.
Yeah.
If the people come out and, you know, come out exposed correctly, that castle doesn't exist. It's nuclear white. If the castle's right, they're so dark you can't tell.
They're so dark you can't tell them, yeah.
So light. It's all about light. Listen, photography is the art of light traveling through a lens, bouncing off of a mirror. Well, it used to bounce off a mirror.
Yeah, now.
And hit a sheet of film, right? And then either the dyes or the silver reacted to the light coming through.
Crystals.
And so photography at its finest and absolute form is light. Even digitally, light still travels through the lens. Maybe it bounces off a mirror in your DSLR. Maybe it isn't in a mirrorless one and directly hits the sensor. Either way, nothing has changed. In the news business, we used to have this thing, you know, when we'd say garbage in, garbage out. And that's why we say take lots of pictures. Like, it's, you know, if you're there on vacation, don't take two or three on your disc that you're going to save for three years.
Just go.
Just take pictures. Enjoy them. And then if you want to post-process them when you're home, post-process them. You're going to be happier at the end of the day with being able to look through more pictures and pick them out. Like, I just found a box of pictures the other day of 4x6s. Like, and I think it was when Snapfish first came on the scene. And they were offering like free 8x10s. And I had one of the first digital cameras. And I printed everything. And it's funny to see these decade-old pictures, you know, because I shot so many of them and didn't care, and they were free prints, you know, like, it's fun to see them. And that's the other part, print your pictures. Like, 4x6s are so cheap.
Me and Melissa just got into this conversation recently.
Print your pictures. Like,
we had a photo printer, and we don't have it anymore. And she's like, you really got to get a printer. I was like,
so at the end of the day, nobody held up a negative when we shot film to the window and was like, oh my God, that's an awesome picture. I get that we do it socially. You know, I do it from my Instagram account and everything else. But the greatest expression of a photograph is its printed form. It's not a photograph until you print it, in my opinion.
All right.
It's a digital capture or a piece of film. It becomes a photograph when you give it life. You give it life by printing it. And prints are so cheap. Print a beautiful picture for your house. Print a 16 by 20. Most places you can have them done for like $8. Like,
there's a print shop right around that we recently went to.
You know, there are so many ways, you know, frames. You know, you don't have to go to a frame shop to have a frame. Pick up junky frames at Michael's at 50% off or something.
Yeah.
You know? Pick them up on eBay. Pick them up with whoever, some online dealer. Like, but hang them up on your wall. Change them off and don't keep them up forever. You shot a new picture you like, hang it up. That's what gives photographs life, is seeing them on the wall. Print them in a photo book. You know, like,
you remember those, folks?
Blurb, you can do, like, you can do magazines.
What was that?
On Blurb, you can do 20-page magazines for $4.95. Like,
and they'll, you send them in, they print it for you and send it out to you?
Yeah.
I've never even heard. You said Blurb?
Yeah.
I've never even known
Blurb does hardcover books as well. But,
oh, okay.
And once you join, there's literally, like, every other day a discount code. So, like, recently it was, like, 25% off a magazine. So now they're, what, $3 each for 20 pages? Like,
Jesus.
You know, so if you got pictures of the kids for grandparents, you just throw them in, you know, use their book creator and dump them in. And a week later, you get a magazine that literally looks like a magazine.
Oh, that's cool. I've never even heard of that before.
So print your pictures. Print your vacation pictures. Share them. Put them on a table.
Yeah.
Like, my kids, one of the neatest things is seeing my kids pick up a photo album from me as a kid, or my wife as a kid, or our wedding album, or something that we have together, and they could pick them up, or theirs. Like, I did books for them, you know, I did printed books, just like from Blurb when they were born, and they picked those up. Every once in a while, you'll hear like, "Did I really look like that?" Or, and they've seen these books hundreds of times, but
yeah, There's something tactile. There's something.
You're not going back to your phone to look at your vacation. I mean, maybe you are. Maybe the first couple of days you're showing people vacation pictures.
Yeah, but then they're buried, or you delete them.
So pay attention to the light. Shoot lots of pictures. Print new stuff.
See, I got to do that last part. Painting with light, guys. That's what cinematography is. That's what photography is. And if you go in with that mindset, especially in Disney, guys, they built it so the light bounces off things to look pretty. You know, just look for it. Search for it.
I mean, you'd be surprised the number of buildings that act as fill light on other buildings when the sun hits it. It's like, I mean, really, it's just a matter of, like I said, I look at everything in the form of light. Every day, every place I'm going, and I do it subconsciously, and then I'll realize what I'm doing. I'm like, that'd be a neat picture. Like, no, I may have no intention of taking a camera up to shoot a picture, but I'd be like, oh, it looks nice. And in my head, I see it as a picture, you know, and I see where the light is falling. Look at the light at Disney. They designed the building certain ways.
Yeah, they did it on
certain locations. at certain points of the day. Like, you could pass up on a photo too, you know, just because you're at one of the places, by knowing that, you know, the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. Yeah. You know where the sun is going to be. Like, it's
not going to change up.
Right.
So tomorrow, you know, it's not going to change.
Maybe it doesn't look good now, but I know that at 2 o'clock, once the sun has passed by Main Street, it's going to look beautiful.
Yeah, that was a killer, actually. I just really quick, and then we get going. At Toy Story Land, we got in for a blog event, and we were there at 6 a.m. And I was like, oh, this is going to be great. Like, I remember one of the first early events we got into at Pandora. We got to see sunrise at Pandora, which I've never been able to see since. And I got this great photo that I love. And I was like, okay, maybe I'll find. Because I remember the first time I went to Toy Story Land, I was like, I don't know why. My mind isn't really clicking with the visuals in here. So I was really excited about sunrise. And then I remembered, oh, it's going to rise over Toy Story Mania.
Yeah. You can, and
that, you know, so I like, part so of my I got one nice, with, I got one nice shot, but that was it. You know,
I think that's been part of my frustration that area is that you can't get on the other side of it.
Yeah.
Like, visually, I want to be on the other side of things because of where the light falls.
Yeah.
On that,
but you can't
get there.
Maybe there'll be paths opened up when Galaxy's Edge opens up. Maybe that'll give it that. So, mate, thank you so much for joining me and talking with me today. And guys, actually, where can everyone find you on Instagram and all that stuff?
It's Scott Audet on Instagram and Scott Audet on Facebook and ScottAudet.com on the web.
And spell the last name just in case.
AUDETTE.com. ScottAudet.com.
Thank you again so much for coming in here. And guys, guess what? That's the end of this week's episode. What's going to happen next week? Midnight Madness or The Black Hole? I don't remember. Have you seen The Black Hole? That movie's insane. You ever seen Event Horizon? It's kind of the same movie, which if you've seen Event Horizon, that should worry you that a Disney movie from the 80s in my head is sort of like that. Thank you for listening this week, though. As usual, this episode has been brought to you by MEI Travel. For all your vacation planning needs, for visiting Walt Disney World, taking a cruise, traveling anywhere around the globe, visit the experts over at MEI-travel.com, where Becky and her team can get you started on your own adventure.
Thanks, Becky.
Thank you, Becky. We'll see you soonish. I hope we'll see you soonish. It's Halloween's coming up. Who are we? We're Last Gen Podcast, LASTGENpodcast.com. You can find us on Twitter at DizMagicHourPod, Facebook, search for Dizzy Magic Hour. We're on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, and however else you found us, because if you didn't know that information, I'm super curious as to how you're here right now. On Instagram, you can find us at Dizzy Magic Hour Podcast. Melissa's running that right now. And of course, to ensure that this show continues, Disney Magic Hour over at patreon.com/DisneyMagicHour. You can come on, become a production assistant, join us for our live threads, get access to those exclusive podcasts that we're going to be doing now. I'm going to be delving into the realm of film outside of the realm of Disney. So I'm very excited to start doing that and sharing that with everybody. Say goodnight, Scott.
Good night, and you won't find him on Twitch because he's got a face for radio.
Face for radio, guys. Good night, Pete. See you later, guys.